this week on The Inside Flap.
A guy came in and he sat beside me at the bar and he said, "You Don Winslow?" Mm-hmm. I said, "Yeah." He said, "You going to write any more about the mob in Detroit?"
Oh, no.
And I said, "No, I'm kind of done." It was a book called The Winter Frankie Machine. And he sort of nodded and got up to leave. And I said, "If I see you in the parking lot, it's going to be a problem."
We pick it up and then I loudly say, "Oh, Jessica, oh, no. You could wear this with your cat sweater."
Yeah.
And then she's like, "Oh, that's a great idea." And I was like, "What do they think? Who's going to buy this?" There is a young woman standing in between on the side, in between the mass of other goods that are there. And she's with her boyfriend.
Okay.
And she goes, "Oh, did you see the cat sweater then downstairs? I knit that too. I crocheted that too." The Inside Flap is available on demand and every week on iTunes, Spotify, and around the world on theinsideflap.com. What more can we do for you?
Podcasting live from Littleton, Colorado. This is the Inside Flap Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. My name is Dave Marcus, and welcome to the show. Seated across the living room to my slight right, maybe like 12:30, 1 o'clock? Yeah, I think 1 o'clock. Laura's at 1 o'clock.
Howdy.
That's
I was
Laura
waiting
Medicus.
For you to stop.
And to my left, on the couch, resting comfortably, in his socks. Got a hole in the bottom of your socks there, Andrew. Get your holy socks, your Sunday socks on. That's Andrew Dowd.
Excelsior.
Excelsior, thank you for joining us on this episode. Yeah, right there. 246.
That's barely. It's maybe like the size of a pencil eraser, if not smaller.
It's still a hole.
That's a hole.
That's a hole.
That's a hole.
Doesn't matter. It's still a hole.
I can see it from across the room.
This is, look at what happened. The guy loses his job. He's showing up with holes in his socks. Goodness gracious. What's next?
Not to complain and sound old, but like socks don't hold up anymore.
They don't?
They don't.
They don't. I just got new socks from Target. And I'm still wearing my old socks because the new socks aren't as good as the old socks.
No.
Very upset.
Like, there's some socks, too, where you wash them once and they collect every lint thing in the dryer. I don't know.
Back in my day, socks would keep you warm. Not anymore.
I do feel like you get holes in them from walking around the hardwood floor. That is a piece of clothing that I can point to and say it is not as good as it used to be.
That's right. That and tidy whities.
Don't know about that.
Andrew?
Yeah, I don't know.
No, neither do I.
Thank goodness.
All right, but listen, I'll tell you what does hold up. That is the novels of our guest today. So excited to tell you about our guest. Once again, welcome to the show. Sorry.
I forgot the Inside Flap.
Episode 247. So excited. Once again, we are joined by one of my personal favorite authors. Don Winslow joins us, author of 21 books. This guy is critically acclaimed. He's an award-winning international bestseller. I don't know what else you can say about this guy.
And he's a nice guy.
He is so, so nice. It's so great that we got a chance to talk to him about his last book, City in Ruins, and sadly, he is retiring.
Oh, and a friend of the show, Alma Katsu.
Oh, yeah.
She had her very first book review in the Washington Post.
Mm. Yep.
She's
she
a writer. She likes,
she pulled some strings to get that and wrote the review for this Don Winslow book in the Washington Post.
Yeah.
Alma Katsu. Shout out to her. Shout out to Don Winslow. And look, he's everywhere right now because he's retiring from writing, and he's going to go on a personal crusade to try to take down the evil empire that is, we don't want to get political.
Is he hiring?
We don't want to get political.
Is he hiring?
I don't know. Maybe you need to want to reach out to him on X. But I listened to, so I saw he was on NPR.
Hmm.
I don't know if you're familiar with the National Public Radio.
Of course.
How much you know about this. This operation.
I grew up in the shadow of Washington, D.C.
Sure, yeah.
Of course I know about NPR.
I started listening to NPR as a teenager.
Bum, bum, bum,
as a teenager. Bum.
Yeah, because our parents listened to it.
No.
We get in the car. Well, my parents did.
Oh, I don't know that my mom necessarily did. She liked music radio. Mm. But I started listening
Lucky
to it on
you.
My own because I started being interested in politics.
Oh, okay. Well,
and that at that point in time, was like good place to learn.
That's a good place. To, yeah.
liberal learn, I guess.
Right. If you wanted to learn from the left. But no, I saw there was an NPR interview on Scott Simon's show with Don Winslow. Gave that a listen. Let me just say that
Scott Simon's elderly now.
You'll find our interview much more entertaining than the interview I heard on the Scott Simon show. Mm-hmm. And frankly,
now it's a must listen.
If you ask me, I don't know where you're going to find a better interview with Don Winslow. This guy laid it all out there. He was just a raconteur, told stories. He was just a great guest. Fantastic. We had a great time with him, and you can hear that interview in just a second.
Now, for the record, did anybody actually ask you, Dave?
No.
Just kidding. Yeah.
No.
Okay. What?
No. Never mind.
Because you did the if you ask me.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Anyone who has to say if you ask me.
That's the worst thing in the world.
No one has asked.
Yeah, thank you. What is wrong? I'm going to give myself.
Just keeping him honest. That's all.
Give myself a buzzer for that. Sorry about that. Yeah. But if you did ask me,
yeah, boy,
I would give you a nice big yeah, boy, for this interview. Listen, it was great. It was great. And all right, so we'll just move on. Before we get to that little story for you about today, so Andrew, a little first world problem for you. We've been having a little issue with our hot tub, and let me tell you something. There's nothing like, and this happened to us over the winter. Nothing like on a cold winter's day, getting out, you know, changing it. Like, hey, guys, let's get in the hot tub. The whole family said, yeah, let's get in the hot tub. Mm-hmm. So you get your swimsuit on. You go out there. You take the cover off. You climb up a couple of steps. You've dusted off the snow off the steps. And you go to get into what should be a nice, warm, enveloping bath at a nice 104 degrees Fahrenheit. And then it's almost
yours,
like...
You keep it at 104?
104.
What do you keep yours at?
102.
102. Oh. Okay. No, we crank it up. That's the peak.
I like
it'll
it to
allow
burn
us to go.
The first layer of skin off.
Oh, my goodness.
So we go with 104, but there's nothing like thinking that you're stepping into a nice warm bath.
Oh, boy.
And then it's ice cold because it takes a second. It's not like you dip
your
toe.
Because at first you're
in.
Like, oh, it's warm.
Because you know you're plunging right
in. It's
warmer
in. Than the air.
So you get your left foot
oh,
in,
so worse.
You're standing on the step, and then you pull the right foot in, and then it's
at one
usually
point we
by
all
then.
Sat down, yeah. And then we realized like we're not.
This
it's
is,
not that
this is
warm.
Lukewarm right now. This is 68 degrees,
but it wasn't bitter. It wasn't like 50 degrees or anything.
No, but it's just warm enough to trick your brain
trick
into
you.
Thinking, oh, this is nice and cozy, and then you get in. And then your core comes immediately down to colder than it should be. Then you have to come back inside and take a hot shower.
Mm. Right. So we were having some problems with that. So I immediately got on. Okay, not immediately. Took some time. But we needed to find a day where I had some time off to meet the guy. We got a repairman. Shout out to Don, who came out. And he said, we popped the cover off. He said, all right, let's see what we got here. I hit the button to turn it on, the heat up button. Again, it was sitting at like 68 degrees. I hit the button to bring the heat up, and it made a little the sound it always makes. And he goes, oh, you got a busted pump right there. I mean, within seconds, he had diagnosed it. He told me, he pulled the panel off. And he said, you got two kinds of deaths that happened to these pumps. Murders, and this guy was a character, let me tell you, he got out of his truck. He had, he told me, as he's walking out of his truck, he's coming up to me, before he even shakes my hand, he's like, yeah, nice day. You know, it's only been four times so far over the winter that I've had to wear long pants. And I look at him, and he's got like Bermuda shorts. They're like board shorts. Literally, these shorts, they got like blue palm trees on them. They literally come down to his ankles.
That's funny.
They might as well be
pants,
long
yeah.
pants.
But he's like a pool spa guy, right?
But he's a pool spa guy. So yeah. This is his shtick. Mm. But he told me that there are two kinds of deaths that these pumps can suffer. Either murder or natural causes. And he's looking at me, and I'm wondering, he pauses. And I'm like, oh, my God, is this guy going to accuse me of murdering my pump? I didn't know. And he waits. And he's still just locking his eyes on me.
Oh, no.
Like, he's making me feel very uncomfortable here. Yeah. I'm almost getting ready to say something. I'm like, I didn't know. But before I could say that, he goes, this is natural causes. Yes. Oh. I gave a little fist bump.
Big believer in the long pause.
Yeah. I don't know. And he said, then he starts going off about these pumps from China. But he told me it lasted a good long time. These pumps run all the time, and we've had it for, 8-9 years. So, but he made sure to get us, as he told us, as he was happily installing the new pump, that it was from California. Mm. So we got an American pump.
So there's typically two pumps in the hot tub. There's a smaller circulator that goes pretty much runs all the time, and then there's a larger pump.
Yeah, no, this is the large one that pulls the heat into it. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. As he says, and he actually showed me, because the electric meter is right nearby. He says, take a look at this. And he pulls that once he got the new pump on there. Yeah, this is not fun. And he hits the button to bring the heat up. And he says, you see the light there? Okay, we got heat going to it. Now take a look at this. And he shows me the meter. And it's got, it's
new. Oh, how fast it's running.
Digital. But it's got little arrows. It's not wheels that turn anymore. Because as he told me, he said, if the wheels aren't turning, Excel's not earning. But this one is our new digital one. But you can just see it's like an arrow to the right. It's like. Yeah.
That's funny. Like the power in Littleton just goes.
Right. But this guy, he had another fun saying. No, if you don't have bubbles, you got some troubles. Yeah, so it's like one of these guys. I mean, the guy's in his 60s, and he's had these sayings for, I can imagine he's been out on job sites for 40-odd years with these same sayings, but he still gets a kick out of it. So, it's funny. He's got like a kind of like a walrus mustache, a heavier guy, a man of a larger carriage. We pulled the panel off there before he changed the pump, and he's trying, and he diagnosed it. He said, "Yeah, let me try something. This is like what you do when you give your when your battery's dying in your car and you give it a jump start." And he takes a screwdriver and he sticks it into the pump, and he said, "Now hit the button for the heat." So I hit the button, and then the pump comes on, which it hadn't come on before. But he like jumps back and his screwdriver drops. But he didn't. He kept his cool, but I'm pretty sure he got a shock.
Oh.
But he didn't give it away. Pretty sure he got a nice little shock to the system.
Huh.
And then this was also kind of weird. After he brought the new pump around and he went to work on it, sat crisscross applesauce as he did the repairs on it. Yeah, right there on our deck.
That's healthy for your back.
Yeah, it really surprised.
Just because you can't sit crisscross applesauce doesn't mean another 6-year-old.
We've been doing some yoga.
Could.
Yeah, we've determined I'm physically incapable of sitting crisscross applesauce. Andrew, are you able to?
No, I think I can do it. I'd rather do that than be kneeling down.
Like I can get my right.
Yeah, it's easy in your body. It's a great way to sit.
Yeah, well, I can get the right knee flexed, but I can't do.
We
this.
Can test that
my
after
left
the
hip.
Test that after the show.
Oh. Yeah, but it's interesting to have the guy out there.
I could tip you both over and then start and then run away laughing.
So the thing is, you may make fun of him with the screwdriver, but what he was really doing is verifying for a second time that the pump indeed was the problem.
Oh, yeah. No, and I'm not making fun of him. I just thought it's funny that he got a shock. I guarantee you got a shock and yet didn't say anything about it. Yeah. But shout out to Don. Who gave me no discount whatsoever. Of course, he didn't know I was going to get on a podcast.
We can't help him. And, our listeners aren't necessarily in this area.
Listen, here's a guy, and this guy, Don, also was telling me, and when I called to get the appointment, his wife told me their house, this is the second time that someone has driven into their house. This time it was a car with guns and drugs and the drivers were high on cocaine and drunk at 10 o'clock in the morning, rammed right into
his
house. So
they live at the end of a street or at the end of a turn.
They do.
They're on the corner of Bellevue. Oh, I'm not, well, let's not
let's just give out Don's address while we're at it.
Give out his address.
It's like, well, yeah, they're on the corner
advertising.
It's just advertising. Yeah. Family business, though. So we're wishing well for Don and his wife.
Now, Will, I think Colorado has... per capita, probably a lot of hot tubs.
I would think so.
Just because this is a great just a great environment for hot tubs.
Yeah. It gets cold at night.
Yeah,
it gets cold at night.
It can be nice and hot during the day, and it'll still get cold at night.
Yep, even straight and through May, even the first part of June, and then in
depends
September.
On the June. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
not a lot of swimming pools. Certainly more hot tubs.
No.
I wonder, though, as our climate gets warmer, because we did jump zones. We're down a zone, gardening zone.
Oh, are we?
And I just wonder if we'll start to see more.
So we can plant. Pools. Can we plant seeds before Mother's Day now?
It depends on the seed. But no, our date is still
Mother's Day.
Still right around then, yeah.
Yeah, and we had a snowstorm today, and here it is April 1st.
Yeah.
And I don't think you'll see the swimming pools. And the reason being is when the sun goes down in the altitude, It gets cold at night.
Well, yeah. That's what it is, yeah.
Yeah.
You'll see the little ones. Like, we got a little pop-up guy in the back that I float around in the summer. Yeah. But, yep, you're not going to see the
fantasies of, like...
It's an in-ground heated pool?
An in-ground...
Oh, how great would that be?
Like, smaller, so that you don't have the cold deep end, like, pool.
Yeah, any listeners out there want to help us out at the inside?
I've looked into it. I was like, how expensive can they be? Oh, they're pretty pricey.
Yeah, wait till the pump blows out on
and if you think heating the hot tub is expensive.
I know, yeah, Andrew. Yeah. So, I don't know what I'm thinking.
So I have some relatives, and they're fairly well off. Mm-hmm. And I will just say that we go to visit them in Arizona, and they have to turn the pool heater on because of the kids.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Now, they complain...
We have relatives who turn their heater on.
Yeah, they complain how much it costs. Right. That even when we're there to visit, I mean, just for like the 4 or 5 days, they're spending hundreds and hundreds of dollars just to heat that small pool.
Mm. Our relatives use solar heat.
Oh, yeah, that's the way to do it.
They're coiled up on top on the roof. Like, the whole roof is covered by coils.
So I feel like that would be a really efficient way.
Yep.
And it works. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
All right, but anyway, that's what's been going on. So come on over to Littleton if you want to hop in our hot tub. It's now working great. Now working
fantastic. Excellent.
Laura, how's your week been?
Oh, good. I did something embarrassing. I thought I would share it as a cautionary tale.
We like cautionary tales here on the Inside Flight.
I have tea, or I go for a walk with a friend of mine. Like once every couple weeks. And so there's a tea shop in downtown Littleton that is our go-to spot. Sometimes it's once a week. We'll have tea there.
Do we want to give this tea house a name?
Oh, it's called NT. I don't know the name, like why they would call it NT, but it's called NT.
NT, like INT?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
That's the name of it?
Yeah, that's the name of it. You didn't know that?
That's a terrible name.
I know. It's not a great name.
That is an awful name.
Yeah.
Oops, as I knock my phone down. That's the little sticker on my laptop, NT.
Oh, there it is.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
it's a woman-owned business downtown Littleton. It's been a business for 16 years this year. I love this tea shop. It is my, what is it, Cafe Perk or whatever, the Friends?
Central Perk.
Central Perk. Yes. It is my Central Perk.
It's your hang. Yep.
I love it.
You go down there with Sylvia a lot as well.
I go down there all the time. So, yes, Andrew.
Let's see the logo again. Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking at the logo.
Yeah.
And is it NT or is that supposed to be...
It's NT.
Is that leaf supposed to be like an eye or something?
I agree.
That could be a bird.
It could be, but it's not.
It could be another
tea leaf.
It's
a tea leaf.
In a tea. In a tea.
Not the best logo, not the best name. Mm. However, the tea shop is the best. Yeah. It's so much so that the barista knows my name.
Oh, all right.
Just saying.
It's a very crowded, popular joint. Down
very
there.
Popular yeah. place, which is another thing that I like because I like being around. I'm an introvert that likes to be around people.
Sure.
What? Don't know why. So we decided, this friend and I, afterward, we were just going to stroll and do a little shopping. We like to go into the shops. We don't usually buy anything. And fondle the merchandise, look around, and talk.
I'm glad you said the merchandise is what you fondle.
Fondle, yeah.
It's an interesting choice of words.
It's really funny.
It depends on the shop.
It depends on the shop. Yeah. So we're in this one shop, and it's in an old house downtown, like a 1900s home. And the bottom floor, there is front and center the tackiest cat sweater that I've ever seen, to the point where you would think it should be a Christmas sweater for an ugly Christmas sweater, but it's not Christmassy.
It's got a picture of a cat on it.
It has ruffles, knitted ruffles on the caps of the sleeves of the, like a sweatshirt material.
Like epaulettes.
Like, yes. like someone hand knit lacy doilies.
Okay.
It has a bow that's wrapped around the cat's neck on the front that's floppy.
Is it like a picture of
it's like a knitted, cat face with a floppy bow. Right. And I even took a picture of my friend with the sweater because it was that like,
that
my gosh, look at this.
Yeah.
It's so bad that I am a normal looking middle-aged person. If I put that on, I would go from normal to crazy. Just like that. Just like that. Like that's what would happen. The only person that could get by with wearing it, I would think, would be a very attractive younger woman. But this is a younger woman
they would wear it
who
in
could
an,
wear anything yeah, and they would look fine.
They would wear it ironically. Hmm. Is what you're
Even
saying.
Then, it would not flatter them. It's just that they're stunning, so it wouldn't matter what they had on. Right? You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's the only one.
That's the only person. Everyone else of us are going to look crazy as soon as we put it on. So then we go upstairs in this shop. And upstairs.
Oh, there's an upstairs.
Yeah, it's actually a very cute shop, despite what I'm saying. It's a beautiful old home in downtown Littleton that's been converted to a shop.
You're referring to.
You probably have been in it with me and Sylvia. I don't know.
Maybe I don't.
Okay. So it's a white house, white.
Did it used to be like a jazz hall?
No.
It was not that place.
Oh, no. You know what that was? This is a side note. There's another cool store in downtown Littleton, and that used to be a movie theater, and they had silent movies there back in the day. It's that old.
Wow.
Isn't that cool?
Yeah.
So this was a home.
Isn't that something?
Isn't that something? So we go upstairs, and there are these bucket hats that are up there. But they're not just any bucket hat. They are crocheted.
Oh, no. Stop.
Horrific colored with yarn bucket hats.
Okay.
They're not, even the way I'm saying it, you may think, oh, that could be cute. No, they're not cute because they're different colors of yarn together.
I don't think anybody was thinking that.
Oh, I could see how it could be like, oh, that's a cute hat, but it's not cute. It's similar to the cat sweater in that it's tacky.
Okay.
And so she and I, we pick it up and then I loudly say, oh, Jessica, you could wear this with your cat sweater.
Yeah.
And then she's like, oh, that's a great idea. And I was like, what do they think? Who's going to buy this?
Oh, no.
Okay.
Loudly, you say this.
Loudly.
You're in your own world.
Yes.
Okay.
La, la, la. There is a young woman.
Oh, no.
Standing in between... on the side, in between the mass of other goods that are there, and she's with her boyfriend.
Okay.
And she goes, oh, did you see the cat sweater then downstairs? I knit that too.
Oh.
I crocheted that too.
No.
It's the...
It's
the maker.
No.
It's the maker of the hat and the crocheted cat sweater downstairs. It is the maker of those.
Well, she didn't.
And Jessica,
seem to pick
my
up
friend,
on your,
who I'm now I'm naming names.
Okay, now we get our name.
She, I notice, has bid a. She has booked it. She has bid a hasty retreat into the next room. She is boom off like a shot. She's nowhere around me, and I'm like, oh, ha ha. You know, at our age, because she's a lot younger than I am, she's probably
she's
in her 20s.
Has she picked up on the fact that you're making fun of these items?
I think so, Dave.
You're not
I
sure.
don't know. Okay. I don't know how you could not think that
you're
I was making
panicking.
Fun. Yes. And right. so then I was like, oh, you would look great.
Oh.
A younger person would look great. I said, when you get to be my age, we have trouble.
No.
Oh, what? I'm backpedaling.
So here's the problem is, Laura, you don't handle situations like this well.
No.
Right?
She doesn't know how to get out of it.
No.
Because, like, to be honest, like until they actually saw your horrified reaction. It probably
she
was.
She might not have known.
And that's it. But you reacted.
I reacted guilty.
Yeah.
Guilty as charged, Your Honor.
Oh, no.
Oh, I'm so sorry. I did that. I said that. Can
Jessica,
I raise my hand higher and say that I did this?
Jessica reacted correctly. She
Jessica
got the hell out of there.
Beat it. She.
I think I do have. I do have sound effect. I do have sound effect of Jessica leaving the. There she goes.
Yeah. She kicked up a cloud of dust, leaving me. Which I do not blame her. And so I...
There she goes. Jessica, where are you? Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Mm. So that's my embarrassing thing. So if you see something that's hideously unattractive in your eyes,
yeah,
don't open your mouth.
No. There's no, you or do it
say
quietly.
It later. Say it later.
Say it later
quietly.
Yeah.
I thought
you
we were
always
alone
have
up there.
To make sure. Well, see, you just saw a younger woman shopping with her boyfriend. You didn't think that. What are the odds?
There were a few people upstairs, though, and I could have watched my mouth. I just didn't know that they would have the makers
standing
there.
What was her reaction to you saying, but it would look good on you?
She smiled and was like, oh, that's nice. She was very nice.
Yeah.
Very, very nice.
And the boyfriend? Did he want to fight?
I did not look at the boyfriend.
Yeah, I wouldn't look at him.
I knew he was there. I didn't make eye contact with him. I didn't once look at him.
He was going to protect his woman. He wasn't going to let you say stuff about her.
She was creation. The kind of person that you can picture who's going to be making these types of hats.
Yeah, I can picture. I can picture her.
Cat thing.
Sure. I can picture her.
Yeah. Not a supermodel.
So maybe you really should have been running.
I should have been.
Yeah. Good on her for having a boyfriend.
didn't look at him at all. Then I went into the next room and Jessica sidles up to me and she's like, sorry, I left you there. That's like,
no,
I
you
get
can't
it.
Blame Jessica.
Oh, I no, don't. No. Oh, no. I don't.
Can't blame her.
No. Mm. So yeah. So there you go. Yeah. So right. Be careful. Yeah. I'm going to let some time pass before
I go
back into
that
shop.
Right there. Be careful.
Be careful. Mm-hmm. Don't open your mouth like I'd like to do. No. Andrew, how have you been?
Good. So I'm going to tell a story. I think it's sort of a coming of age for parents.
Okay.
And this is basically that my teenage son.
Aww.
So Dashiell turns 15 on Wednesday. And,
wow.
And so that's going to start the whole driver's training.
You are starting
learning
a landslide.
Permit, right? And it wasn't too long ago on the show.
Yes.
It's documented what the Medicuses went through.
Yes.
That's right. Yep.
With their teenage
we had quite a few escapades the Medicuses did. Yeah.
Now
with culminating with the police officer that pulled her over.
So we're getting ready to get into this, right? And we have a very, nice, responsible older kid.
He is really responsible.
Dashiell is very responsible.
Yeah.
And he wants to drive. I think
he's level-headed.
Mostly so he doesn't have to ride in the same car with his siblings.
Of course he does. And he's the oldest of three.
And his dad. But but in any case, so I'm getting ready to do all this stuff and I'm thinking, okay, I want to put his ass in the safest vehicle I possibly can.
Sure.
So I start doing all this research on, what's the safest vehicle I can put him in? It's like, let's just buy him a brand new car, put him in a new car.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like,
you sounded like Bob Barker.
It's a brand new car. Rod Roddy.
Come on down.
Come on down.
It's a brand new car.
So the thing is, then I'm thinking, I've heard horror
it's
stories.
It's a brand new car.
Sorry, Bob,
tell him what he's won.
A Kia? Okay. A Honda?
Well, Kias probably have the best safety ratings, probably some of the best value at this point, right? There's two cars there.
Okay.
But in any event, I'm thinking, I've heard horror stories about what my auto insurance is going to do when I add a teenage driver. Mm. So I'm thinking, let's research that. And so basically I looked at adding, and we pay maybe $3,000 a year for our auto insurance, right? Full coverage, et cetera. And if we add a 16-year-old son to the policy, it goes from $3,000 a year to $7,000 a year.
Wow.
Yep.
Now,
yep.
Let's face it. This is a kid that's going to be driving a couple hundred miles a month.
Wow.
Right? Barely going to be driving a car. So in any event, all my plans have gone out the window because I'm not just looking at one kid.
Yeah, you've got
I'm looking at three kids. I'm looking at 10 years at least of having teenage drivers on our auto insurance policy.
Wow, Andrew.
And so I'm going to research it some more. I have a friend who sells insurance. I'm going to talk to him.
Wow.
And it may be that because one of my vehicles happens to be a 8,000-pound truck, that, a teenager driving that car, that whether my kid's going to be driving the car or not, the fact he has a driver's license and he's in my household, he may be driving my car.
Oh,
so maybe it has to be
because it's so heavy.
It's just
you could hurt
it's just
somebody.
A monstrosity. I mean, there's a lot of damage you could do in a vehicle like that. It also
aren't a lot of the EVs super heavy.
That and they're fast. This thing goes 0 to 60 in under 4 seconds.
Yeah,
I mean, you got 8,000 pounds going 0 to 60 in under 4 seconds.
Deadly,
right? And
deadly.
It's like I told him, my kid's not going to be driving that car. He doesn't want to drive it. I don't want him to drive the car, but unfortunately, it is what it is. So this is chapter one. Over the next, let's say, 6 months, I'll be figuring this out.
Well, and I mean, it's true. I'm just looking it up just now. Statistically, young males are more likely to get involved in an accident,
yep,
and more likely to take more risks. So, having been a young male myself, I can say that's true, Andrew, and I'm sure you can say that's true as well. Now, we know Dashiell's a very responsible kid.
He does not seem like your typical.
They're not going to pull him in and interview him. You know
what
I mean?
No, but his good grades will go for that a little bit. That helps.
Maybe that, and that was with the discount or whatever it is for good grades.
Oh, never mind.
Yeah. But,
have you looked into electric bikes?
Yeah. Well, that's not safe either.
No.
We've had a couple kids commuting to school on electric, like, wheeled vehicles. Oof. That has not ended well. Because, you know, we've got, around this area, we've got more and more distracted drivers.
Oh, yeah.
Hitting pedestrians, hitting cyclists, hitting people on...
That's all over the country.
One wheels
think,
and
right?
scooters. Yep. Yeah. So, I mean, so this is chapter one. I really don't know what I'm going to do other than, you know, I'm going to do more research.
You know, and when I looked at our stuff for Sylvia, I didn't look at the yearly. I guess I pay it quarterly. So I just looked at quarterly and it wasn't a lot.
And supposedly, girl drivers are cheaper than male drivers.
Must have been a lot cheaper. And then to the point where I think maybe I wonder if I did it right.
Well, if you have older vehicles too.
No, she's driving a new car right now.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. Keep us
our spoiled children. Well, I mean, not new. It's 4 years old now.
Let me know. I'd like to know. Tell me about that first trip you take with Dashiell behind the wheel. And
yeah,
you
that's
and the
what
passenger
we want to hear
seat.
About.
That's what we want to hear about.
We do want to hear about
and
that.
How many curse words come out of your mouth?
The thing is,
that ain't easy.
They will do something horrifically unsafe and dumb.
Yeah.
Like,
and then they will,
and then
tell
they
you
will
that
look
you,
at you.
You're stupid for telling them that they're wrong.
They will look at you like you have overreacted. Yeah. Like it's
like, yo,
like they were doing 2 miles over the speed limit. They're like, well, that's nothing. Why are you over? It's crazy.
Chill out. And
chill out.
I only just blew through three red lights, not four.
Yes.
Relax.
Relax.
Yeah. And then you have to deal with the stubbornness of your teenager.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. They're going to dig their heels in the sand.
Ooh, yeah.
And, good luck with that. You're going to have a lot of fun with that.
It is not fun. It is not fun.
All right. Well, I'll tell you what is fun. Mm. Don Winslow's new book, City in Ruins, the conclusion to the epic, epic gangster trilogy starring Danny Ryan. This book has, now I've read all these books. I've read almost everything Don Winslow has written. I'm, in fact, reading or listening to another one of his books I'll tell you about on the podcast next week. I cannot get enough of this guy's writing, and this book has it all. It's everything you want in a Don Winslow book, everything you want in a mob-inspired crime novel, like everything. Dirty Cops, you want that? You got it. Payoffs, bribes, torture, you want it? You got it. Insidious murders, you got it. Courtroom drama, threats, it's all there. I can't... Listen, I guarantee you at some point they're going to make a movie of this trilogy. I can't wait to see that because it's going to be better. It's going to surpass the Godfather trilogy for the greatest mafia trilogy.
Was he the author who talked to us about... oh, I guess you'll hear this.
Yeah, and you'll hear it. He's got another one of his books being made into movies. Who was that?
Somebody big, and now I don't remember.
Big.
But listener, you're going to hear it next.
Yep, you'll hear it next. So this book finds Danny in Las Vegas building his empire. I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time going into the details. In fact, I'm not going to spend any time because Don does an excellent job of that himself. Yeah. And really, you'd rather hear him talk about it than me. I can't tell you how much I love this book. It's funny. It's heartbreaking. It's grisly. It's packed with action, drama. What more can I say about it? I don't know. Let's get to Don, shall we? So here now, talking about his book, City in Ruins, and other things too. I mean, he really opened up. I think you're going to really, this interview was a treat. We even cried during this.
We did.
Yep. So, well, we didn't. He did.
He did.
Yes, he did. So here now, this is the great Don Winslow. Break out the rye bread. It's grand salami time. I owe my another victory. Yes, my city, childhood, my life. Watching Griffey right under those lights. You're in San Diego?
I am. Well, Julian, you know, little town outside of San Diego where I live. Yeah.
Very good. Yeah. We just got back last night. We spent our spring break in San Diego.
Whereabouts?
Hillcrest.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right.
A little Airbnb there. I spent some time on the beaches.
Nice. Which beaches were you at?
Where'd we go? La Jolla?
Cabrillo National Monument?
Yeah, beautiful down there.
Yeah.
The weather was a little chilly, right?
It was chilly, Don.
Yeah, I know. If you think it's chilly down there, you should come up where I am. We're
oh, really?
Feet and it's cold. It's not chilly. It's cold.
Well, we came back here to Colorado to snow on the ground, so it's still warmer than it was here.
You're in Denver, right? Or
yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I love Denver, man. I'm going to be there June 17th.
Oh, are you going to the Tatter Cover?
No. Oh. They didn't book me there this year on tour. No, my wife and I drive cross country every year.
Oh.
Rhode Island and back, where I live half the year. Oh. And Jean, my wife, lived in Denver for about 12 years.
Oh, wow.
All her good friends are there, so we usually stop in Denver. And the Hotel Maven.
Yeah, that's a great hotel.
Yeah, and then have dinner. I think Domo, that Japanese place.
Sure.
Yeah, Andrew went there.
Yeah, of course.
It's supposed to be really good.
Hit Domo, so yeah. I love Denver.
Oh, that's
it's funny, you know. I don't want to live in a big city anymore. But if I did, and this sounds insane, it would be either Paris or Denver.
that does sound insane.
That no one has ever those two cities never come out of anyone's mouth. We're talking about what city they want to live in, Don.
But I mean it. You know the bookstores, the coffee places. It's a great town. Yeah. So whereabouts in Denver, y'all?
Well, we're actually in downtown Littleton.
Littleton,
sure. Yeah,
Dave teaches at East High School.
I teach at East High School, right?
Oh, okay, great. Yeah. So, yeah.
That's cool. Great. Well, happy opening day.
I'm just going to interview you the rest of the
time. Right.
I'm tired of answering questions. You answer them.
All right. Well, I'm excited about the Orioles. Are you excited about the Padres? I saw you retweeted some baseball. You're a baseball guy?
Yeah, I'm a baseball guy. Being excited about the Padres is tricky.
Like about,
it's a disappointment.
Yeah. Yes. It's letting yourself in for disappointment. But I also have my Ocean State Waves. I help sponsor a little baseball team in Rhode Island.
Oh, wow.
That's fun.
New England College League. I sponsor stolen bases at the Ocean State Waves. So anytime the home team steals a base, you hear that stolen base was brought to you by Don Winslow's crime novels.
So, oh, awesome. Man, that's the best sponsorship ever.
Wow.
Isn't it?
That's awesome.
The local body shop sponsors foul balls because the foul balls hit the cars and dent them. The lumber company sponsors a home run, so I have stolen bases. So
that's
so
great. Awesome. It reminds me of, do you remember, are you familiar with the movie San Diego, My Blue Heaven and the Mafia?
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Remember at the end when Steve Martin fields the Little League team and they're all wearing
So, what was the movie that was sponsored by the Bail Bondsman?
Bad News Bears.
Yeah. Bad News Bears, of course. Yeah. Bad News Bears, yeah.
But by the way, I went back and watched the original not too long ago. Yeah, it's not.
I did the same. I lasted about 20 minutes.
I was like, what are these kids saying?
I know. And I was excited too. I saw it. I thought, I'm going to do that this afternoon. And then I went, no.
No.
Can't do it. Oh. But the movie that holds up, the baseball movie that holds up for me is Bull Durham.
Yeah. I just recently rewatched that one too. That's the go-to for me anyway.
Yeah. One of the few sports movies without a climactic game.
Yeah.
Right. There's no two outs bottom of the ninth. Nothing like that. It just sort of fades out.
When he finally makes it to the big leagues, it's an afterthought. You know, he's getting
an
interview.
Yeah.
You know. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Then he comes back to Susan Sarandon, which I guess is a good choice, I guess.
Pretty good choice.
Yeah.
You guess. Ron Shelton recently wrote a book about the making of that movie.
I read the book. Yeah.
It was great, wasn't it?
Yeah. He also wrote one of my favorite bad movies, The Best of Times, but I love that movie. And it just bombed. It's Robin Williams and Kurt Russell.
Oh, that's right. That's
the guy who drops the pass in high school.
Football, right? Yes.
And he plays the game. Yeah, I love that movie. So That's Ron Sheldon.
That's funny. Well,
but you probably want to do an interview or something.
Sure, we might as well get to it. You know,
all right.
You got to be really pounding the table.
You have to. Okay, go ahead.
It's the last time you got to do it, though, Don.
I know.
But listen, Don, let me just tell you, you just sit back. I'm just going to blow a little smoke up your ass for a little bit because this.
Okay. I could use it. It's cold here.
This book, how great, what a fitting tribute and what a capper to a fantastic career and just a smashing trilogy. I absolutely loved your final chapter in this one, City in Ruins. What an ending. This is an intense and epic tale of hostile takeovers, junk food, and sharks. Don, what was it that inspired you to wrap it up with this one?
You know, it's the trilogy, without getting too pretentious about it, follows
get pretentious.
No, okay. Thank you very much. I'll talk a little differently. Should I use my NPR voice?
Oh, please. No.
Use your Shakespearean.
I direct Shakespeare a lot. It follows the life arc of Aeneas, and which starts in the Iliad with Aeneas as a minor player, which is why I picked him for Danny. In the end, Aeneas has to build an empire. I thought, where do you build an empire in 1990s America?
Mm-hmm.
You know, could it be a drug empire? That felt wrong for him and kind of boring. Would he stay in Hollywood and build an empire there? Done it, you know? And so then I finally, and it took me an embarrassingly long time, because this trilogy took me about 30 years, you know, right. To hit on Vegas. You can build anything you want if you got the money.
That's right.
And they have. I mean,
they have, absolutely.
They built Paris, Venice, pirate ships, pyramids, whatever you want. If you've got the cash, you can do it. And when I hit on that, it sort of opened up the possibility of this third book. Mm-hmm. But the problem was in the Aeneid, the inciting conflict is once again over a woman.
It always is, isn't it, Don?
You know, listen, I'm not going to comment. But that wasn't going to work because it had already been done in the first book and it just felt trivial, frankly. It felt not good enough. So then I hit on that it could be a piece of real estate, a valuable piece of real estate that these guys could be fighting over. And that's when the book really took off for me.
That's good. Yeah. Yeah. And Las Vegas, I really liked the themed hotels that Danny comes up with, particularly the one with the sharks.
Yeah.
Did you have fun thinking about, like, if you could design your own casino, did you have some thoughts about what you might do?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I love the shark thing, you know.
That was awesome.
I'd love to have a shark. That'd be great. It was fun coming up with that stuff. Look, I am far from being any kind of designer. You know, that's my wife, actually. She designs commercial spaces.
Oh, awesome. But, I'm a residential interior designer.
Oh, there you go. She's a commercial interior designer.
Cool.
Every once in a while she did residential on our houses, you know, but that's. It really was fun kind of coming up with those things and what would be a little different and, you know, what could be really out there.
Yeah. And like you said, it's already been done. So no matter how extravagant you create, the reader's going to say, yep, sure.
Yeah.
Great. Sounds great.
You can't do satire about Las Vegas.
That's the problem. That is true.
You can't, because you pick up the paper the next day and it's real, you know? So, yeah.
I love the scenes in this book between Danny and his son. Just so amazing. I think these scenes really illustrate the kind of guy Danny really is and what fathering meant to him, particularly the junk. This is what a road trip this would be. The junk trip, right. Moab mountain bike tour of Utah. Many ways, I found this book to be an homage to fatherhood. What do you think about that?
I think so, but I only thought so in retrospect.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You know, it's amazing how little self-awareness you can have. You know, it really is. Book two is about Danny wandering the country with his toddler son. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize until I was in the middle of book three how that paralleled my own life.
Wow.
Wow.
You know, because most of my life as a writer has been a failure. You know, I mean, I was an overnight success in my 50s, right?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And so my wife and kid and I, from the time he was an infant, were traveling almost all the time.
Wow.
We lived in hotels for 3 years.
Wow.
Really?
I was a private investigator and a trial consultant. You never knew how long a case was going to last. I didn't want to be separated from my family. And so we just kept moving. And we look back at those years with great fondness, by the way. You know, it made us very close. Yeah. We had a wonderful time. Then it occurred to me, yeah, I spent the better part of 20 years wandering not only the country, but the world. Wow. Trying to make a living, directing Shakespeare, as you alluded to, you know, chasing leopards around Kenya with a camera, that kind of stuff, with a family in tow.
Wow. Well, spending weeks holed up in a Motel 6 in Des Moines, Iowa, that could either go one or two with your family. That's either going to go one or two ways.
It could go one or two ways. Yeah. Closer,
or right. Divorce.
Yeah. Divorce is right there. No, my wife loved it. And we talk about it very fondly. And so, I think about book three and fatherhood. You know, I lost my father quite a few years ago. But my mom during COVID, while I was writing this book, you know, we had just left Rhode Island where she was. And 2 or 3 weeks later, she took a turn for the worse. We couldn't go back. There was no funeral. You know, we weren't allowed. It was the strangest damn thing because it was just like, well, your mom died. Okay. It was surreal. And I don't want to bring this interview down, you know, but I think that therefore in finishing this book, I was thinking a lot about parenthood.
Yeah.
You look back on your life when you know you're coming to the end of your career about what really matters, you know. I never shut the door of my office when I was writing.
When
Thomas was still a kid and in the house. He's married now, right? That's how long it took to write these damn books. But because I always thought, you know, that if he wanted to go play ball or talk or whatever, that was more important.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, and I put an old computer on the desk beside mine.
That's fun.
And like he'd be 4 years old. So I was writing The Trail to Buddha's Mirror and he was writing The Trail of Boots and Mirrors, you know. So I thought a lot about that. Yeah. Mm. So I think a lot of the book is about fatherhood.
Yeah, and junk food. Do you have a favorite junk food?
Oh yeah, come on, man. I'm an animal. If I could live on that stuff, I would. I mean, you know, listen, being in California, of course, In-N-Out burgers.
Of course, yeah.
Of course, you know. Classic. I mean, that's the first thing you do when you get off the plane, right? You
either go get a taco. We recently got a couple out here now.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lines. Listen, line. When they first, people waited in line
for hours.
Yeah. Traffic in the whole neighborhood had to be redirected because of the line for the In-N-Out burgers for months.
They're great. What can I say? You know, and tacos and stuff. But I go back and forth like Jack in the Box spicy chicken sandwich, which is kind of my road food. You know, if I'm driving back from LA at night, you know, there's a certain place in San Clemente I'll pull off right near the 5, get that spicy chicken sandwich, and hit the road again. So Mr. Springsteen and me and the spicy chicken sandwich, we're good. We're good. But Thomas and I, my son and I, once a year, we'd play hooky from school and go down the hill, as we quaintly say, because we live on an old ranch way out in the country. And we'd go down to the city and just pig out. That was the official name of the day. It was a pig out day.
Oh.
You know, just eat crap all day.
There's a lot of great restaurants in San Diego right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, a lot. Yeah. It's a good place to eat. Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, so we're speaking of baseball, and you talk a bit in the book about the Gambling Impact Study Commission that Congress created.
Yeah.
I'm curious to get to know your thoughts on the Ohtani matter and the explosion, just the proliferation of sports gambling now. What's going on?
Well, it's the internet, right? It makes it easier. You can get online and lose everything, you know, whereas before you had to go someplace to lose everything. Yeah. Look, I don't gamble. I put myself through graduate school gambling.
Really?
Yeah, I had to go to the UK to do research for my master's thesis and didn't have the money. And this was before it was all legal. And so I would bet 4 football games a weekend, trying to win 3. And then I also bet boxing.
Wow.
I would have been better off getting a job. Do you know what I mean? For all the work and research and worry and stress that went into it. You know, sometimes you shank the ball off the goalpost and, you know, you just lost your money. I don't have anything to say about the Ohtani thing, really, because I don't know anything about it. None of us do.
Strange, yeah.
The story's a little sketchy to me.
Little sketch.
But then again, are you if you're Major League Baseball, you're really going to take your biggest star?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I'm sure Pete Rose has something to say about this.
A thing or two. Oh, yeah.
But the proliferation of sports gambling, it concerns me on a whole number of levels. I think it warps the sport, you know, when everything now is about the point spread.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, and the papers are putting out, you know, injury reports, and that has to do with the point spread. I feel bad. I mean, I knew a guy who lost his restaurant on a Monday night football game.
Wow.
Oh. You have to be mentally ill to bet on Monday night football in the first place, right?
Let's face it. Yeah.
It's not a good idea. Sunday night football, but back in the day, you know, that's the game you don't bet on, right? But I remember going into this guy's restaurant in Lincoln, Nebraska, and he's laying on the top of his bar face down, brutally hung over, and saying, yeah, I lost the place last night, you know, on Chicago, Minnesota.
Wow.
You know, so my grandmother was a professional gambler.
Really?
So yeah, New Orleans.
Wow.
Like riverboat? Poker games and back rooms.
I guess.
she couldn't have been 5 feet tall, but she used to make me gamble with her.
Really?
She taught me poker and craps and 21 and blackjack. Wow. And if I did something stupid, like trying to fill an inside straight, she'd take my toys.
That's so interesting.
And I'll never forget one time we were watching some documentary on Las Vegas back in the day. And she looked at the big casino on the screen. And I'll never forget what she said. She said, darling, they didn't build that because you win.
That's a great line.
People don't.
So now gambling bores the hell out of me. I can't stand it.
Have you been to Vegas in a while?
Oh yeah, I'm there a lot.
Are you really?
Well, I was because of researching the book. I have very close connections there. I have close connections with Metro, with the police force there, and you know, some of those old guys, man, they're still around. You know, some of those old, you know, fringe of the mob guys.
Really?
Yeah. They're still, they're having coffee or tea or whatever, you know, one of those joints, you know, sitting outside in the sun, and they'll tell you stories.
Wow. That's awesome.
We were just yesterday. We were in San Diego.
Yeah.
We were in
Coronado.
Coronado.
And you didn't call me. Okay, but go ahead.
I kept looking. I was like, he's got to be around here.
He mentioned your name a lot.
We were having brunch at this place, and this guy comes in, spitting image of Paul Sorvino. And I'm like,
oh really? Wow.
This guy's mobbed up. I pretended to take a selfie and got a picture.
I was in a bar in Del Mar one night, you know, up the coast there.
Uh-huh.
And a guy came in and he sat beside me at the bar and he said, "You Don Winslow?"
Wow.
I said, "Yeah." He said, "You gonna write any more about the mob in Detroit?"
Oh no.
And I said, "No, I'm kind of done." It was a book called The Winter Frankie Machine. And he sort of nodded. and got up to leave. And I said, if I see you in the parking lot, it's going to be a problem.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow.
But I didn't. So, you know.
He just happened. Got the hell out of there.
Yes. He said what he wanted to say, found out what he wanted to find out, and left.
That book, though, Winter of Franken Machine. Now, that's, I love Danny Ryan. Don't get me wrong. Danny Ryan's great. But this guy, Franken Machine.
Like Frankie, huh?
It might be my favorite creation of yours. Do you have, like, do you have any characters who still, like, you wake up in the middle of the night and they're talking to you? Any?
Yeah, all the time, unfortunately. Yeah. They won't shut up. But Frankie's one of my faves. I have a fondness for Frankie. Yeah. And by the way, Frankie's headed for the movies. Have you seen a TV series called The Bear? In Chicago? That guy, Chris Storer.
Oh.
That's his next project after he finishes season 3 of The Bear, is to make a film.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm excited about that. Yeah, I have a fondness for Frankie. I have a fondness for Danny. I think I've spent between a guy named Art Keller, who was a protagonist in 3 of my other books, and Danny, I probably spent more time with them than any other actual human being, with the possible exception of my wife, you know.
Yeah, 20 some years. I mean, man.
Yeah.
Are you, is it hard to quit that? It seems like it'd be hard to stop. Like I know they're still talking to you. Do you still get the ideas? Or I'm sure, or just it's
sure. Yeah, it is. Listen, I mean, I was in the harness for a long time, you know, and in that routine of starting work at 5:30 and, you know, I try to sleep in now, and I can't seem to do it.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm in bed at 7, my wife's like, congratulations, you know, great. it's not easy to quit.
I did like you have a line in the book, you know why old people move to Florida, because when they die they don't mind so much. And
what a guy slapped my knee so hard, Donna, it still hurts when I read that one.
These lines, are you just high-fiving yourself or
no, that's kind of a mean thing to say, and I'm headed to Florida on this tour, and I'm sure it's going to come up. I mean, a couple of years ago, I said something to a newspaper reporter in Boston, just casually on the phone, about Boston clam chowder being creamy baby puke that should give rise to the resurrection of hanging. And
oh my God!
And she printed it. And the next night, I had to be in Boston.
Yeah.
People were upset, but that thing followed me like I'd be in Germany, you know, and as they say, German comedy is no laughing matter, you know, and people at the Q&A would very seriously say, you seem to take your clam chowder very seriously. Joke, dude. It was a joke.
I don't know, Don, you can't give it. You can't stop you. You bring it up again in this book.
I know. It's a thing with me, right? There's because it's harder and harder to get the real deal. To get
that's
the real thing. Everything else is an abomination unto the Lord. And so I don't know what to say about it. It's a quirk of mine. Yeah.
No, it's
idiosyncrasy.
We all have our hangups. That's not a bad one.
That's one of mine. Yeah.
Audrey had on, you know, why not? Now, I was curious about this line as a high school teacher myself, a high school theater teacher, and I want to talk to you about your Shakespeare experience too.
Yeah.
But you write in the book that it is a truism of American life that no one really gets over high school. That is true, isn't it?
It's true. Yeah. For good or for ill or for neutral. You know, I think we never really recover from those years.
Yeah. What was your high school experience like?
Not great. I mean, listen, I was not an outcast. You know, I had a lot of friends.
Oh.
I wasn't bullied. I wasn't picked on by the athletes. I mean, I'm 5'6" and a 130, but I played hockey.
Oh, wow.
I was a reasonably sort of popular kid, but I hated high school.
Yeah.
I hated the classes. I felt imprisoned all the time. You know, I had one or two great, great teachers, though, you know, and what I have to say is I got a great education there. Mm-hmm. You know, when I went to my first year of college, it was a joke because I'd already covered it all in high school.
Wow. Really?
Yeah. I had two great teachers, a guy named Bill McEnany, still a dear, dear friend, who taught biology, but also taught jazz. He would invite a certain number of kids to his house on Thursday nights, and you'd listen to jazz, and he educated you about jazz.
Oh, wow.
And that's still a passion of mine, and I think really important in terms of my writing style. And then I had a teacher, Josephine Gernsheimer. It was her last year as a teacher. And I went to take an exam. She threw a pop quiz like the third day of class on a book I hadn't read. Short story, Fall of the House of Usher. And I wrote on the top of the page, I could probably fake my way through this, but I don't want to insult your intelligence or mine. Flunk me.
Oh. That's awesome.
And sure enough, comes back, big red F, see me.
Oh.
So I go after class and she says, don't come to class anymore. I thought, this is great. I should have thought of this years ago. Right? She said, but come to my office for lunch.
Oh. Okay.
So I go down to her office at lunch and she says, what's in the brown paper bag? And I said, a tuna fish sandwich. She said, give it to me.
Wow.
She ate my lunch.
What?
Wow.
Yeah. She ate my lunch. And then she handed me a copy of the Atlantic Monthly and said, there's an article. She had marked it. Read it tonight and come back in for lunch tomorrow prepared to discuss it.
Wow. With another tuna fish sandwich. Did you bring one for
her? She took my lunch every day. For a year, and she'd give me Triscuits. She had a box of Triscuits, so you can have some of the Triscuits. But she ate my lunch every day, and we would sit there and discuss these articles and these essays. And it wasn't until many years later, when I was teaching at Oxford, that I realized that I'd gotten the benefit of an Oxford-style tutorial with this brilliant woman.
Wow. That's amazing.
Right, that really saved my life in a lot of ways. Oh. And my first ever book signing, I'm going to cry. Yeah. she came with a box of Triscuits.
Wow. Oh, man.
Wow.
You know.
That's awesome.
So that was high school for me. But otherwise, man, I hated it.
Yeah.
Now in the years, you know, intervening years, I mean, I volunteered at the local high school for 6 years, directing high school musicals.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah. For which I get 200 years less in purgatory.
We just did Urinetown.
Oh, cool. Wow. You did that in high school?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Not in Julian. I had to go to the school board to do Damn Yankees instead of. Oh.
Wow. We had probably about 65 kids in it. It was a big, big.
That's a big show. Yeah. Yeah. I did what? Crazy for You, Anything Goes, Guys and Dolls, Get Your Gun, you know, all that stuff. That's Bye great. Bye Birdie. And then we started a Shakespeare program at the local elementary school.
Oh, that's great.
Went this week to see their production of As You Like It.
Really?
Yeah, they still use my adaptations. I cut them down to about 45 minutes. Still all Shakespeare's words.
Right, yeah.
But just shorter, of course. And it's been going on for 26 years at this elementary
school. Amazing. That's perfect. That's great.
Wow.
Yeah, because you can really see those Shakespearean themes, you know, in your work throughout it. Yeah. So it's definitely informed your writing.
Definitely. Yeah,
that's really cool.
Yeah.
And 45 minutes. That's really 45 minutes. That's all you really need is Shakespeare.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm talking now about, I just finished directing an evening of Irish one act plays here in town for St. Patrick's Day. And now they're talking about doing Romeo and Juliet next year. But one time at Oxford, I was about to do Romeo and Juliet, you know, and we cast everybody. And I was sitting with my dramaturge, this British kid, and in our rooms there at college. And I said, I can't stand to do another act 4 and 5 of Romeo and Juliet, man. Once Mercutio dies, you know.
all the
I said, I wish you could do the first three acts of Romeo and Juliet and the last two acts of As You Like It. And we kind of looked at each other, and then we got out paperbacks and started cutting them up, and we put it together because every character in As You Like It has an analogous character in Romeo and Juliet.
Oh, wow, wow. Really?
Romeo becomes Orlando, Juliet becomes every character. And so I swore the cast to secrecy, and I was sure this was going to get me fired, right? And opening night, you know, Juliet is, you know, about to marry Paris, except, you know, the nurse comes in as Celia and says, let's take off to the Forest of Arden. And they do that, and you literally heard Oxford dons gasping. I thought a couple of them actually going to expire, you know, in the theater. And afterwards, my bosses said, can we take you out for a drink? And I thought, well, this is it. This is the guillotine.
Yeah, sure. Here it comes.
Yeah, yeah. And we go out for the drink, and they said, can we sign you to a 3-year contract? You know, because this was so interesting. So you never know. You know,
again, it was going to go one or two ways.
Yeah,
one or two ways. And well, I didn't care which, by the way. I was good with getting canned too. You know,
that's always when they like you even more, when you're okay with.
That's true. Yep.
When you don't care.
Yeah, when you don't care.
Yep.
Yeah,
don't care. It's really the only power that a writer has in this business is the power of no.
Interesting. Huh. Yeah.
We don't have the power of yes, but we do have the power of no.
Yeah.
Well, in theater, Don, we like to say the power of yes and. And I'm going to say yes and to your book, City in Ruins.
All right.
I've just
been yapping here. I apologize.
Are you kidding me? It's been an absolute delight. Yeah. And we wish you good luck in your future endeavor.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Maybe I'll see you around the Hotel Maven or Domo or something.
I'll be the guy in the Oriole cab lurking around front. So.
Apparently, I get this. I get this. A theme emerges here.
Well, it's opening day, Don. I mean, come on.
I know. We got the Giants coming into town. So we'll see how that goes. So. Yeah. All right. You guys be well. It's been always fun talking with you.
Nice Great talking to you.
Thank you. Take care, Don.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.
The Inside Flap.
All right. There you go. That was Don Winslow. Please, please, please pick up his book, City in Ruins. It is amazing. And look, it's the last thing he's going to write. Oh, so he says. I don't know. We'll see. I mean, I know how much he said he enjoyed writing it, even though it took him, you know, 20 some odd years.
So he's taking a break, but I can't imagine that somebody that's writing isn't going to write, you know, maybe 10 years down the road or something like that.
I mean, the guy is at the top of his game.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's at the peak of his career.
Yeah.
I don't know. Good luck to him and whatever he does. I know how much I loved his book and all of his books, so I'll keep reading the ones I haven't read and rereading the ones I have read. But anyway, let's open it up.
The library is officially open.
Time for some
book reviews.
Well, let's start with
Flora Medicus.
She comes from Silver Spoon, Golden Rule, private school, never miss on a church.
Laura, what do you got for us this week?
I have a book called Listen for the Lie by Amy Tintera. This is a very good thriller. I stayed up past my bedtime, not once. But twice.
Twice! Mm.
Yes, I read this on the airplane too, which is how it's amazing. So it's about a young woman named Lucy, who 5 years ago was found bloodied and beaten up. She's covered in blood. She's beaten up. She's walking down a street in her small hometown in Texas. Mm. She has absolutely no memory of what has happened to her. She cannot place anything that has happened within probably the last 4 to 5 hours.
Well, that's sounds like a delightful way to
come to. Her best friend, Savvy, was found dead nearby in the woods, also beaten.
Hmm.
The blood that Lucy was covered in, Savvy's.
Oh.
There were some other things, too, that were suspicious. So Lucy was heavily investigated for the murder of Savvy. She was never arrested. She ended up eventually leaving town for L.A. once she was let go by the police. When she left, everyone in this town seemed to think that she had gotten away with murder. They also thought that the case of quote-unquote amnesia was just convenient, a very convenient excuse, and that she really did know. And she was just hated in this small town.
Damn.
Cut to 5 years later when a true crime podcast decides to cover and try to solve Savvy's murder.
Oh, sure.
So the podcast is called Listen for the Lie, the title of the book. It's an incredibly popular podcast. Hmm. So popular that her boyfriend, so she never told her boyfriend about this murder thing, is looking at her with concern and is trying to figure out a polite way to break up with her.
Yeah.
And she's, of course, not really wanting to let him off the hook that easily. And he also seems scared of her. And then she also gets let go from her job as well, because clearly they are listening to the podcast and they make up an excuse to let her go from her job. So her grandmother calls and invites her to come back home for her 80th birthday. And Lucy goes, even though she swore she'd never set foot in this town again. It's, you know, universal line. She goes back. So I can't give too much away after Lucy returns to the hometown.
Sure.
So the story is intercut with transcripts from the podcast, which is incredibly riveting. The podcast host interviews her friends, Savvy's friends, all kinds of stuff. And the current timeline, so it's interspersed with the podcast and then the current timeline.
Okay, yeah.
And it's told from Lucy's point of view. And Lucy, we realize she really has no idea if she killed her friend or not. She does not know. And it's very riveting because as a reader, we have no idea. Yep. So despite all of this like amnesia and murder, this is a very funny book. The writing is very witty.
Oh, good.
And the main character is appealing. I love it when a writer can combine something like murder, basically, and then have funny things to lighten it up.
Yeah, you gotta have that humor.
That's
in a book like this.
Pretty much how real life goes, and I feel like I enjoy it. Not that real life's about murder and wit, but
murder,
you know,
and wit.
When you have something terrible happens at times.
Now that's a good name for a tea shop.
A tea shop.
Murder and wit.
There are ways to lighten up life with humor, so I feel like in real life there is that.
Yeah.
It seems like it almost ought to be a genre in and of itself.
Right, I know.
Well, but where you live, you grow up in a small town and you leave. Mm. And then you have to go back.
You have to go back.
Because there's so many different series and everything.
You can't go home
movies
again. Yeah.
Where, okay, this person's got to go back. This person's, you know, got to go
back.
And you wonder, what is it about like that type of book? Mm-hmm. I mean, do we all have something in our closets back in our hometown? And it's just, I don't know, there's something in us like going back to the place we kind of grew up.
Yeah.
Where we no longer live there. But there's something.
Right.
And we all think we are returning as conquering heroes.
That is true. We want to think that about ourselves. That's for sure. Mm. Yeah. But it doesn't always feel that way. And then sometimes you go back and you think, man, why did I even come back? Like, I'm so glad I got out of here, you know?
Right.
And then other times you think, oh, well, this is pretty. Why did I think I needed to get out of here?
Yeah, I do think the perspective, and it's just another element of like the eyes of growing up in a small town. Mm-hmm. And then after you come back, like after you've moved away and you come back, I mean, you definitely see it with different eyes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I went to high school in a really small town called Hereford, Maryland. And I did not like it there. And then when I have gone back, I really don't like it there. So
did you go to Hereford High?
Yeah.
And was the football team still big back then? The
football team was terrible back then.
It was terrible back then.
It was terrible.
Cross country team was good.
Thank you so much, Steve.
Yeah, that's right. You were on the cross country team.
Soccer. I think we had a good soccer team.
Okay.
So
that course, you guys had that hilly course.
It was a really
bear.
Awful
We'd come
course.
Up there and
every
run
time
every year,
I ran that
it
course,
was a bear.
I ran the cross country every single year. Every time I ran, I would fantasize. This sounds terrible. I would fantasize about ways to fake an injury so I could get out of doing it.
Yeah.
I never did it, but I spent a lot of my time running fantasizing about doing it. Never did it.
Yeah.
Really wanted to.
I did that in a meet once.
Did you? I don't blame you. They're awful. Yeah. You get through it and you're like, this is terrible.
It wasn't a Hereford, it was Annapolis High.
Oh, that should be flat.
It wasn't. It was in the woods. There were some ravines, and I tripped and fell and then limped my way home. And the worst thing about it was as I crossed the finish line limping, everybody gave me a round of applause.
Oh, for being brave.
For being brave and finishing the Rick.
Oh, that's really funny. Oh, that's so funny.
Oh, man, yeah.
I've never heard that story. Terrible. I don't blame you, because that is literally during the races, yeah. I would just fantasize about it.
There was a big, heavy guy who finished behind me, but I was dead last except for that guy. They didn't clap for him, but they clapped for me, and I felt just awful. Just awful.
That's the worst.
So I probably, anybody who was there, 1988, I guess it would have been Annapolis High cross country meet. Apologies if you applauded for me.
It would be humiliating though. Because it felt like at the time enormous hills. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes I'd have to walk up the hill. I couldn't run up it. Yep. And then I'd get a, come on, Hereford, this is your course.
Oh, no.
Because I'm wearing the Hereford jersey.
Oh, no.
And you want to just give them a signal that tells them you don't appreciate it, but I was too tired. So the podcast, okay, I'm getting back to this.
Yes, getting back, okay. Sorry.
So this podcaster, who she does meet, is very handsome. Her hometown friend, Emmett, is also very handsome. Mm. And, of course, she has a devastatingly handsome ex-husband who still lives in her hometown and does seem sad that he let her go. So you have all that on top of just an incredibly exciting true crime style book that is also funny. And I don't know what more this author could possibly do for you.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sounds outstanding.
It is. Listen for the Lie.
Okay. And that's recommended by
Laura Medicus.
My book this week.
Dave Medicus. It's a bonfire. Turn the lights out. I'm
burning everything you love. Is Kill for Me, Kill for You Kill for Me, Kill for You by Steve Cavanaugh. This is an excellent mystery thriller written by, now listen, I love this guy's writing, Steve Cavanaugh. I've enjoyed him a lot over the years. He writes the Eddie Flynn legal thrillers, and I saw that this book, which came out just last year, was getting good reviews on Goodreads, so I picked it up, and this did not disappoint. So this book is a tale of several women, and we start with a narrative about two of these three, or basically three women that the story centers around. So we start with a narrative about two of these women, Amanda and Wendy. Now, they meet in a grief support group as both of these women have lost loved ones to murder. And they both think that the police have not pursued the real murderer enough. They are sure they know who the killer is of their loved ones. But the cops, for several reasons, they're done with the cases. And they think that these killers are out there. So it's up to them to do the job. But they know, and these women, you know, just met, that if the person they've already publicly accused dies, they would be suspect number one. So what do? They steal the plot from strangers on a train and agree to kill for each other, knowing that they will have a rock-solid alibi. Hence the title, Kill for Me, Kill for You.
Okay, isn't that, that's a Strangers on a Train or something like that?
Yeah, Strangers on a Train.
Yeah.
They're like what I had just said.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dave.
That's okay. So thanks for listening.
Hi.
What could possibly go wrong? Meanwhile, in another part of New York City, a woman named Ruth is in her brownstone home alone when she is viciously and brutally attacked by a man with piercing blue eyes. And this guy gets away before he's caught. Together with her husband, Ruth sets about trying to find the man with the piercing blue eyes and bring him to justice. Will these two tales intersect? Oh, you better believe it. And they do so in a chilling way that I absolutely love.
The twist.
This is an old school slow burn tale with a big payoff. This is one of those books where you really get to know these characters and feel the grief that they're feeling, and you'll start to think you know where this book is headed. But it's always great when you think you've got it figured out, only to realize the author is just one step ahead of you. He is devilish, this guy, Steve Cavanaugh. This is an excellent thriller, mystery thriller. I highly recommend. Check it out. It's just a really good, nice character. Sometimes these books, they don't spend enough time with the characters themselves. And this one really does. Kill for Me, Kill for You by Steve Cavanaugh. Andrew Down. This bed is on fire with passion and love. So what do you got for the city?
So let's see, Dave or Laura, if you look this one up on Goodreads, because I did not. But this book is called Metamancer, Book One in the Scale Touch Saga, and it is written by William I. Zard, Z-A-R-D. Now, I love this book. It is a coming-of-age story, but it is extremely well-written, some of which I will describe to you. Now, here's my guess. I see this having like a 4.6 or 4.7 on Goodreads.
4.27.
Okay, well.
You know, Andrew, there's not very many ratings, and only 186.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I love this book, and I'll...
Well, yeah, I mean, we should point out anything over 4 stars is amazing.
You can get even a 3.9 on Goodreads, you're doing incredibly well.
So this book is extremely well written. It is a great escape, and there's a complexity to what's going on here that there's only one book. I cannot wait for the second book in the series.
In fact, I just skimmed some of the reviews, and someone had given it 5 stars and said, my only complaint is that books 2 and 3 are not available.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
And, you know, and my final comment of this is William needs to hurry up and finish the next book.
You're so demanding of all these authors.
So I know.
So William...
We are, though.
Get to work. Well, part of it is, you know, if we look at where we are, whether it's watching a series on a streaming series or reading a book...
I know.
We expect to be able to watch, read 3 books.
That's the problem.
We expect to be able to watch 8 episodes or a couple seasons of a show.
We do.
I mean, like, I don't know, society, everything is just has to be like instantaneous.
Yeah.
Here we are now, entertain us.
Yep. So this book starts out, there is a mysterious woman, a witch, and it's clear that she's a witch. And
burn her. Did they burn her?
You don't get the sense that she is evil. But she is carrying a basket, and she is very carefully approaching the house, or the estate, or the manor. But it's actually nobles live there, and she basically places something on the doorstep, and then she goes back to observe what happens. Now, of course, it is a baby in the basket, right? But just the way this...
Oh, I thought it was a flaming bag of poo, but that's what you did when you were a kid.
And the husband speculates, well, is there a poisonous snake in the basket? Because that's something that people have done, is put a basket of poisonous snake in this world. But just the way this book opens, where it's just meticulously describing the careful approach to the house, everything she does to mitigate and evade detection... placing the basket there. And again, you get the sense she's not an evil person, but she places the baby there because she believes it's a home strong enough to protect and care for this baby. And they in fact, you know, they do that.
Is it a powerful baby?
Well, we'll get to that. there are some things in this book, maybe even some prophecies related to this child. Basically in things that happen. But the way the book, it's like peeling an onion. You read the book, it unfolds. It doesn't go where you expect it to go.
So, I like that.
Except for in one specific instance. Like, does Johnny's magic work the way everybody else's magic works?
Yes.
Of course it doesn't.
Of course it doesn't.
Yeah. So the young boy's name is Johnny. They raise him as their own. He ends up also having a much younger brother named Zachary. But they raise Johnny as their own son. But it is clear that he's wired a little bit different. Now, Johnny is smart. He is a good student. He is a good kid. He's just different, right? And it's always the question as well, who is Johnny really? And they don't tell anybody that he was adopted, right? Only they really know the secret that he's adopted. And so the book starts out with all this. And there's things that happen as he's growing up. Now, the family, it's a loving family. They love each other. It is a beautiful family. But this is a dangerous world. It's a world where there is, of course, magic. There are elves. There are goblins. There are nefarious plots and things. And even the family, the mom and dad who took Johnny to raise him, they moved to where they moved because they wanted to get out of, like, the mainstream with all the magic because everything was so dangerous. So even here, though they're on the outskirts of the kingdom, it's still a dangerous world. And you get that sense, this is a dangerous world. Even if you're powerful, it's dangerous. But these are good people, and Johnny is a good boy, and he's a good character. But things don't really seem to work out for him, right? And you read a lot of this book, and it really just ends up being just you know, despite how smart and good and skilled he is, he just ends up meeting with one failure after another. So he goes to train as a knight. He excels at training a knight. He's top of the class. But then, of course, a tragedy happens, and Johnny can't really get his mind right after that. And so he ends up really leaving being a knight, even though he excels at it. But because clearly that is not the path for him. So then he goes and he apprentices to a bookmaker. Well, then he kind of gets betrayed. And so that ends up not working out. And he's honest with his parents. He's like, well, here's what's happened. I can't explain it. And he has a great relationship with his parents. His parents love him. They don't necessarily blame him for any of what's happened. But they think that there maybe is something else going on.
Mm.
And that is indeed the case. And again, this is a dangerous world. And his parents know that this is a dangerous world. And his parents also know that Johnny's life may very well be, you know, filled with danger. And those around him may also be at risk because of who he might be. Now, this book doesn't really reveal, like, you can read all the book, and one of the reasons for wanting the second book is this book doesn't necessarily reveal the entire truth
about him,
about who he is.
Yeah.
Right? It starts to unpeel those layers of the onion, and it is great, and you will enjoy every single page of this book.
Wow. Every page.
Yep, every page of the book.
368 pages. So.
Now, of course, at the end of this, sort of Johnny's third career...
People love this book.
...is a wizard decides to take him on as a student. And so he ends up unwillingly going to learn from this wizard, but it seems to be the only path that's basically, you know, left open to him. And that's where he discovers that he's a metamancer. But can he tell anybody he's a metamancer? Absolutely not. He has to keep it secret. Now, he has other types of magic too, but the metamancing is the one that probably has the greatest potential. But it is also the one that he has to hide from everybody simply because of how powerful and how dangerous being a metamancer is. Mm. And it makes him a threat to just about everybody. And so the book is called Metamancer, and it is written by William I. Zard.
Yeah, people are really loving it.
No, I love the book. Yeah.
Reader Nestle D. Weichel on Goodreads has said the book is properly edited. So that's good.
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, and I'm not sure if this is this author's first book or not. I'm not sure if he's written other things. But, you know, like I said, I need that second book.
Yeah, that's what people were saying.
He has not. This is his first book.
Oh, yep. Wow. And then someone else was saying that there's some of the characters are so well developed, they could be their own character in a spinoff.
And I could see that where he could go other places.
Yeah.
He could go other places. And some of the characters, well, I don't want to give anything away, but like I said, unexpected things happen in this book. It is not, you know,
yeah,
it's not your typical fantasy.
And it's Kindle, right? You've got it on Kindle.
Yep, got it on Kindle.
Very good.
All right, very good. And that brings us to...
Audiobook of the Week.
The Audiobook of the Week, which this week is... my pick is called Schrader's Chord by Scott Leeds, narrated by George Newbern. First of all, I started listening to this book, and I got very excited.
Oh.
Because I didn't know... I don't look to see who the narrator is most times, because I'll just listen to anything. Mm. But when I heard this guy's voice, I said, I know this guy. He's narrated almost all the Linwood Barclay books that have given me so much joy. And apparently he's also voiced Superman for some DC cartoons. And he is, I don't know, Andrew, do you watch Scandal? You watch that show, Scandal?
I don't think I have.
He plays Charlie on Scandal, George Newbern.
With Kerry Washington.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. I was immediately into the book because of George and was equally pleased to find that the book was worthy of a George Newbern narration. This is a supernatural horror book about rock and roll. And it reminded me a lot of that Grady Hendrix book, We Sold Our Souls.
I love that book.
And you know, rock and roll has a long tradition of ties to Satan worship. And this one twists that old notion a little bit. In this book, a man who owns a record shop... and in shocking fashion that no one could have seen coming one day, hangs himself. And his son, Charlie, who returns back to Seattle to be with the family after this tragic suicide, learns that he, Charlie, has now inherited the record shop. He has also inherited four vinyl records that, when played together, unleash the gates of hell.
That's awesome.
That's right.
Is this a funny book?
It's a funny, very funny.
That's
in fact,
funny.
At the beginning, we meet this guy. We don't know who this guy is, but his wife is there next to him at every corner, and it turns out that his wife is dead, but she keeps nagging him.
Oh.
But she knows she's dead, but he's trying to get away from her, but because she's dead, she's following him everywhere, but she's still nagging him, and it turns out that this guy is trying to get a hold of these records. And, you know, I don't want to tell a whole lot more about it, but this is a fun ride. It's creepy. It's a great horror book that also kind of follows the people who work in the record shop. That's interesting. It's got a lot of fun surprises along the way. So let's take a listen to a clip. This is Schrader's Chord by Scott Leeds, narrated by the great George Newbern.
The road to hell might be paved with good intentions, but Lewis Goodwin's intentions, which as far as he was concerned, were as honorable as intentions got, would never lead him to a place as interesting as hell. If anything, his good intentions would most likely land him in hell's waiting room. He pictured spending eternity in a drab, windowless room with brown shag carpet, lifeless floral wallpaper, and corduroy couches with plastic covering. And maybe that was what he deserved.
All right, there you go. That is your audiobook of the week. And that'll do it for us this week. Episode 247. A sad day as we learn that our guest, the great Don Winslow, is hanging up his pen and laptop no longer to write another novel. But that's all right. He left us with some great books, including his new one. Check it out. Please. Check it out. City in Ruins, the finale to the Danny Ryan trilogy. Until next week, my name is Dave Medica. See ya.
Adios.
Excelsior.
About Boston clam chowder being creamy baby puke that should give rise to the resurrection of hanging.